Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to the Billboard Sharpie Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
And this one's different because we got so many people here. We got 9 people. You could feel like we're on a baseball team here in October. So we got everybody. We're recording this in New York City on location at Gray Noise Studios with, yes, some very special musical guests taking time out from Taylor Parks' Burnout, which is a get-together for songwriters taking place in Brooklyn as we speak. So Taylor and everybody, thank you so much, first of all, for taking time to chat with us. I guess we'll just go around the room because there's so many people to introduce. First up, if you listen to the podcast regularly, you'll know these guys, Dave and Yael Penn from Hit Songs Deconstructed, which tracks the compositional characteristics of Hot 100 Top 10 hits and analyzes songwriting, production techniques. You've been on the podcast, I think. This is your lucky
15th. This is lucky 13.
Lucky 13.
So welcome, Dave. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. 5 musical guests. We're so excited. Why don't we just go around the room? Everybody introduce themselves.
Well, I'm Tommy Brown. I produce songs and I write hits.
Well, I'm Leon Thomas. I like to consider myself an entertainer. You've seen me on the screen, multiple TV shows and films. And I also write and produce songs with a production duo called The Rascals. And I'm one of them, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah. It's The Rascals, baby. I mean, gang, gang. I'm missing my homie Chris Riddick-Tynes right now, but he's in LA getting the work in.
So, we got a tip off earlier. One of the songs we're working on this year has been a big hit for you, Gold Roses, with Ross and Drake.
Mm-hmm.
We got a tip off earlier that there may be some more work with the Styx God coming in the future.
Well, the thing is, you know, I'm working with Boy Wonder right now. He just stepped in on management. So, you know, shout out to Steez as well, his partner. And we just signed over with, you know, Isla Management, and they got us in with Drake a good bit. So that's, like, really cool because I'm a huge Drake fan. You know, he's also a Nick alum, you know. So, like, dealing with that, seeing somebody who made it out of the muddy waters of Nickelodeon and, you know, got into, like, you know, everything else is, like, really cool. Because sometimes it can get a little tough to jump out of that into, you know, the world of music. People come with, you know, preconceived notions, you know.
I am Taylor Parks. I do a little bit of everything, from the acting side, which is where me and Leon originally met, and then to the music side, which is where we again started to grow together again. And just like now, I just kind of in this world of collaboration between lots of different worlds, whether it's mental health and music or production and acting and, you know, just basically all over the world, and like in the entertainment in general, I write songs.
Yes. Hi, I'm Sarah Hudson. I'm a songwriter, artist. I like to say that I'm a muse. And I write songs, and I have my own podcast now called Write to the Source, where we actually talk about a lot of, you know, the similar kind of thing, creative and spiritual and wellness. Yeah, and I'm just here to write more hits and be a light to everybody.
And I'm Laura Anderson. I'm a songwriter working between Stockholm and LA mostly, and I'm kind of at the beginning stages of my career and so excited to be here with all these legendary creators.
Oh, we're happy to have you.
Thank you.
So, yeah, you talk about legendaries, the word, and I'm probably going to embarrass you guys with the chart success you've had, but Sarah, you've co-written Dark Horse for Katy Perry. Taylor, you co-wrote Ariana Grande's first two Hot 100 hits, among other songs you've written with BTS. Lovela is Khalid and Normani. Just from the Billboard side, what's it like as a writer, producers, when you see songs become hits, when you see them go up the charts? Is it is some combination of, you know, it was all about creating the song, or is it, wow, I'm really, whether it's surprised or ultimately, I'm just so appreciative that songs are getting that reaction from people?
Well, I think it's, like, for me, because, like, in regards to Billboard, we have a very fresh new relationship, and it happened very fast to where it was like, oh, there's three, and then there's four at the same time. So, but I think that I had different reasons for what I appreciated out of all those different things. Panic at the Disco meant something, and the process behind that and the memory behind that record is completely different than what me and Tommy did with Thank You Next, which was, oh, there's all of these different memories attached to the placement. So in the beginning, you're thinking, okay, you want it to do well, obviously, but it's not until after that that you're like, okay, now it's done well, what are the other things that, like, were really exciting and separated this from the other placements for me, in particular, which is the things that when I walk into a studio and I'm like, oh, I remember when I did this song here, or I remember working with this artist there, like, that's more so what it's about, and what also it's fun to kind of look at on Billboard and see your friends, you know, to your left and right, and remember those memories, you know?
Right.
Yeah, for me, it's like, I always think of going into the studio and just leaving everything, you know, all the worries, all the noises just outside of the door, and just creating, especially when you're creating with your friends. For instance, like, I have a song right now, Good Things Fall Apart. It's kind of climbing up the Billboard charts right now, an alternative. I wrote with, you know, two of my best friends, Jay Hart and Jason Evigan, and we just were in a room, the three of us. We had the best day ever, just laughed and really, like, talked about, you know, our emotions and what we were going through, and just wrote a song that came from our hearts, which, you know, doing this every day, we try to always have it come from the heart, but some days you're just not there and you're overthinking and blah, blah, blah. So when there is a day where you're like, I'm with my friends, we're writing something so real. And then I always say, like, leave the song at the studio in a way, like almost just like, okay, that came out of me. I'll go back and edit it if I have to, but like, I'm moving on, you know, 'cause you never know the outcome of a song really. But when you look and it's seeing it on the charts and doing well, and you think back to the memory of like, oh my God, that was with friends in an amazing moment. And there's nothing like that feeling when it's really comes from that organic,
from that place. It has to start there. Or else you're making music that you don't know if you actually want to, which also, like us writers, I think we've all felt that way. It's like, okay, am I making the music that I want to make, or am I making what I think they want me to make?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's the hardest thing, too, I think, to balance out. You know,
I was going to ask, how do you balance that? Because that's tough.
It is tough. I think it's just trying to stay conscious, you know, of why we got into this in the first place, you know? I just think back to, like, okay, well, I was in a band sleeping on a studio floor with no shower and broke and filing for bankruptcy. Yeah. And then I had to cultivate that inner child somehow, because I'm like, this is all I know how to do. I'm doing anything I can to fucking make art. So I still try to think of that to this day. Like, why am I doing this? You know, and the noise can get really loud and really intimidating sometimes. But that's why this camp that Taylor's doing, where we're meditating, we're doing sound baths, we're doing aromatherapy, things that are bringing us back to our center and our spirit. It just is like, oh yeah, I'm a creator, you know? And people like what I create because it comes from a real place and I'm channeling something real, you know? So anyway, I could talk forever, so tell me to shut
up. I think there's something interesting about the inner child part of it all. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a lot of people get so serious and they start treating songwriting and production like a day job, and it's really a passion filled, you know, career path. You know, you should find ways to, like, make it fun for yourself. It should be fun. And the second it stops being that, I think you need to start doing a lot of the work that we've been, you know, handling, you know, on this trip, just becoming self-aware of where, and really checking in with yourself. Where am I? What am I feeling? What's going on? Why am I feeling this way? Maybe I need to go take a walk in the park, or, you know, talk to somebody I really love, you know, shout out to grandma, you know, whatever you need, just to ground yourself, you know?
Yeah, I think that's super important. Like, for myself, I'm a very, very introverted person. So when I was younger, I used music to, like, communicate with people. And that's how I spoke to people through music, because I'm not really good with new people. So I try. But I think being out here really helped me get back to there as well, because it wasn't like a forced thing. It's like, yo, let's create, though, paint and have fun. At the same time, let's meditate, which is really important. I've been telling everybody about it, and everybody's like, yeah, we going when you come back to L.A. We can't wait.
So is this something that was never really thought about enough? And I mean, not, you know, maybe from personal experience in years past, but it seems like this is more of a new movement in terms of the wellness for creators, and actually fully respecting the people who, well, this is the first step of where a song comes from. Are you guys the writers and producers?
You are. You can't build a song with tools that you pick up from the ground. You don't. So if it's coming from this inner place, if it's coming from your soul, if it's coming from something much bigger than you, that can't be recreated by not taking care of your soul. You're singing songs for the world. Yeah. So if you're not experiencing the world, then how can you make songs that are relatable? How are you going to make songs for people if you're not going through the things that they're going through? We all, like, as songwriters, I think that we all can say, like, we all get our heart broken. We all get our, we all fall in love. We all fall out of love. But, like, if you're not experiencing those things and you're not refilling the well, then what do you have to give?
Well, on that topic, how did this come up? What inspired Burnout? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Man, a little bit of everything inspired Burnout from my own personal experiences with literally finding out that my stress and my anxiety, something that I didn't realize, that I thought just stopped and disappeared after college, was affecting my body physically. Like, I physically started to have seizures from stress. Like, I was reading an email one day and seized out. That's crazy. And woke up with my friends around me. I was reading an email. I had to go through all of these different things and try to figure out, I'm not epileptic. I'm not those things. It's not. So what is it? And when I went, they literally were like, I don't know what you're stressed out about at this age, but you had a stress-induced seizure. I lived by myself. The scariest thought is you being on your own and you not being able to wake up from something, or you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's so scary. And so my own personal experience with that, and realizing, this is fun for you, right? Checking in with myself, like, so then what are you stressed about? How can we avoid doing that again, because it's never that serious, you know? And then also looking at my other friends' experiences with burnout, there was a point where I was like, yo, writing like 3 songs a day and like just going. They knew me around that time. And that wasn't the thing that was necessarily draining. It wasn't like the creating part was, but it was everything else around it, and not understanding that I have to refuel, because all my friends are all going through the same things, like whether they're bigger than me or whether they haven't had the successes or whatever, and they're going through it in different ways, which is why for Burnout, I was like, okay, let's give people the tools to and the access to it, and let's just prioritize it for them, since most of us won't do it. Mm-hmm. Most of us won't do it for ourselves. So, yeah, we're not used to waking up this early or whatever, but we might have woken up this early on accident in L.A. and still just, like, sat around on the couch, maybe watching Netflix or something like that, which whatever way that is you getting back to you is that way, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things that I think that we all tried that maybe might not necessarily be the thing for us, but now you know that it exists, and you might have found that one thing, you know, whether it's Tai Chi, or whether it's aromatherapy, or whether it's centering yourself in the guided meditation, which Leon really enjoyed. One of these things is going to be a tool that you can use to get back to why you started this in the first
place. So it's a catalyst to get everybody going.
Let's go, because everybody says they're going to do it. We all know we're supposed to do it, but how many things do you not do in life that you're supposed to do?
Yeah. I've been going to the gym for 3 months and never went.
Membership is burning a hole. I'm like, okay, tomorrow's the day.
Y'all feel you. All guilty.
Is that pressure, is it partly self-pressure? Is it the more successful you get, your plate gets busier and you've got more to do? And is it also that a songwriter is now more of a business person overall? So there's all these things that are making they're making everything busier for you.
Well, I mean, you can't trust just anybody to run administration. I mean, you genuinely have to look over everybody's shoulder and make sure things are being done right, comb through every contract, make sure things are making sense, you know? And that does add a little bit of pressure to the process. But, you know, Taylor, I can say, is really, really stepped up in the world of being not just a great creator, but a really great executive. And, and I watch how she expresses her ideas to people who aren't necessarily as creative as us. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard to break that down. You know, it's almost like we're speaking a different language, you know, and she really has a really good process of just speaking to them directly. You know,
it's crazy because you think about being a creative and being an artist, and then you think about the harsh business side of the entertainment industry, and those two things just don't go together. You know, I mean, I think they do go together, but it's like our spirits are so fragile and sensitive, and I feel like we're so open to be like receivers that when we have to deal with the business side of things, like I feel like sometimes it can get so overwhelming, and so it boggles, you know, a lot of artists and creators down, and when you have to be creative, you know? And so I don't know, we were just talking about earlier, if there was some kind of like program or something to help up and coming writers and producers, like learn about the business side of things, learn to watch your back, learn to look out for you, you know?
And communicate with them the proper way, because like what he said, it's like a language barrier.
Yeah.
Because you have, you see it very much as two sides, suits and creatives.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what is the way to combine these worlds?
Yeah.
What is the way we have to have, that means we have to have more suits that are actually coming back in the studio, like what happened back in the day, building these relationships with these people that are creating, because then you also develop a sense of, this is a human that I'm about to screw over.
Yeah.
Right.
They don't, there's no space to put to the name, so it's just another contract to them. And then we also have to have more creatives in the suit side.
That's what we have to have.
That is, there's some way that we miss the proper communication. And I think more creatives, like, and for me to step up and say, look, for any other creative that has been told, you stay on your creative lane for a second. That's wrong. That's wrong. Now, I'm not saying that everybody is meant to do both sides, but I'm saying that it's necessary for, if you are to do it, to step up. If you are meant to do that, step up.
To help bridge the gap.
The gap.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Then you can't have somebody, Joe, that worked at a car wash, expect to understand what we go through and what, as creatives, do.
Well, and the crazy thing is, Joe at the car wash is telling us what song, what like songwriting is, and what songs are good.
We didn't go to school for music.
Well, which boggles my mind on the daily. I don't know if that boggles y'all.
It definitely boggles you. Like, so you mean to tell me, Joe, you just spent your entire life, and I'm not saying that what your job before that is gives you, but I mean, any other job, you would have to have some type of degree.
That's
you have to have some type of experience.
Mm-hmm.
just some type of experience. So tell me why, like, if you became a publisher and, like, what is your experience in music?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and sometimes those, like, sometimes just great fans of music make great publishers, but they at least know, they're self-aware enough to know.
But they don't understand the nitty-gritty, though.
Exactly.
But have you actively been, like, trying to understand more about the business side of things so you can step over to, like, the suit lane and speak that language?
I mean, yeah, I think you learn as you grow in the business anyway, whether you like it or not. It's like you're going to get screwed over. You're going to sign a bad deal. You're going to go through some things, you know, freaky. Not everybody, but a lot of us, you know, because in the beginning you're like, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And then you learn as you go.
Yeah.
And then it's like anything in life, you learn and then you make better choices, you know. But
exactly.
I know, you know, for Taylor doing this camp, it's like normally labels put on camps or publishers put on camps, which is dope. But it's like we're grinded in those camps. Like every morning, I was saying earlier, like, wake up. Coffee, right, go to bed, wake up, coffee, right, go to bed, you know,
and we
burn out. So I think for her to step in this position and put on this camp and say, I know what it's like to be a creator and we need to nurture our spirits and our hearts and then we can create, I mean, that's, you know, that's what it's about.
And you get a better sewing process.
Exactly.
And that's what it's all about.
And you have more fun.
You always go to the sewing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Thought I'd end up with Sean, but he wasn't a match. Wrote some songs about Ricky, now I listen and laugh.
Building on that, then you were talking about the camps that, you know, the labels put on, etc. So if we flip it, how do you feel that the industry could be more supportive of the songwriters and producers?
Hey.
That is the tea right there.
I was basically saying this, like, look, like, going to, I was talking with Ali Tempo this morning, and, like, one of my, like, favorite, like, things that I ever heard in my life is everybody's gonna get used in life. You're either useless or useful.
Yeah.
That's a very dark way to think about it, right? But it's just, I'm one of those people that she says, like, I'm very practical and also very creative. I've managed myself my entire career down there. And so I have to have, okay, this is the creative side of me is saying.
Yeah.
And this is what the other side of me is saying. So, like, if they just had more creatives in the positions to say, hey, guys, do you know what's going on in the studio today? This is a problem for the writer and the way that you guys did the pairings together on working. Hey, maybe if you had a songwriter put on the camp with you, you would understand, because these song, you're trying to recreate a formula, right, by putting the same people in the room without knowing why the formula worked. You can't bake a cake. You can't. But there's a million different types of thing that could come out, and you, and it's just because you have the same ingredients, it could be a little bit too much of some of it, and it won't work. It just won't work if you don't know what makes it work and what made it taste good and what made it. It's impossible to recreate it.
Now, when you mentioned about having more creatives in the C-suites of a lot of these places. Obviously, that includes, we've seen this with artists. I think that's been a past couple of years, a movement towards artists who need more time, who are burning out. We've seen publicly, you know, Demi Lovato or Selena Gomez who need a break. Do you think there's still a hierarchy, like, where songwriters are still at the lowest, even on the creative totem pole, are still seen as very close to the bottom or bottom?
Oh, completely. Completely. And then, you know, you'll have the people that feel like they're even beneath us. You know, there's always perspective and all that. But definitely there is there's some kind of thing that just happens that it doesn't trickle down. Mm-hmm. The respect doesn't trickle down. Even outside of the money, it's like, wait a minute. What are the songs? What are the lyrics that you're singing to? Are you selling beats here? Are you are you able to, like, we're not, how are you not respecting the thing that's making you a lot of money?
And the craziest, the craziest thing to me always is, without the song, what, there's nothing on the radio. There's no Grammys to be won. There's nothing for the artists to sing, unless they write their own songs. But without the song, there's nothing.
Yes.
But we're treated, we are still at the bottom of the totem pole, and you're right, it's all about perspective. We are grateful to be where we are and making music in these positions, but there definitely has to be some things that change as far as songwriter rights and, you know, and
just recognition overall.
Recognition, yeah.
I mean,
recognition, like understanding that every single time we go to the studio, it costs us money. Mm-hmm. It costs us gas. It costs us. It's not like we're gonna have us at the studio for 12 hours. It's no going back home to cook a meal for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you order in,
yeah.
And then all of these things, you're doing that every single day. Yeah. Do you know how much it costs you to go to work?
Yeah.
Who else does it cost to go to work here?
And we don't get paid unless the song is actually cut.
Right.
And we don't really get paid unless the song's a hit.
It does well.
So it's like, you know, I mean, it is a labor of love, obviously, but there
nobody
needs...
Nobody else will show up to work for and pay to go to work.
Yeah, there
I'm
needs
sorry.
To be things implemented.
I think somewhere the communication, like, I'm a person who believes in God. So God, to me, created everything. So he's hanging in heaven with the good people. We're creators of one of the most powerful things in the world, music, and they put us in these situations where we're with everybody and everything, and I don't think that's necessarily what we should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they figured out a way to put themselves into positions to kind of control the creators. Oh, no, we're not using that. We're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, the conversations on the music get...
Yep. It's controlled by the same labels and the same publishers who are all the most powerful. And it's all... But, and it's not even to say that publishers are bad or labels are bad or blah, 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 because you have a lot of great publishers, you have a lot of great people within these companies, you know, as well.
And we need them.
And we need them. So what we're saying is, the same way that we can respect, you know, and understand what you bring to the table, understand what we bring to the table, because we know we ain't gonna go out and go collect our and say we don't know how the fuck to collect. We don't know any of that type of shit. So
which
yes.
Insane.
Yes, yes, very necessary.
Like, in any other job, it's like, oh, one day I'll get paid. I don't know how. I'll see it one day. And it's like, what the hell?
Literally,
it's insane.
Talk, say this to somebody who goes to a 9-to-5 and literally say, well, maybe I might or might not get paid for these hours that I'm putting in. I might, maybe. Nobody, I can't think of a job that does it outside of any type of artist, you know, and that goes beyond songwriters and you know, that's producers.
You wouldn't stay in that job in the first place.
Right.
You wouldn't have showed up for the job.
Right.
If they told you, hey, we're going to work for
free.
We'll
see how it goes.
See how it goes.
Yeah.
Check your mailbox today.
Oh, by the way, it's not 9-to-5, it's 24/7.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's the curse of it.
And you pay your own way.
You love it so much
that
you keep doing
it. It's a labor of love.
And it's also, I loved in that little workshop we had on like the second day, the distinction between job, career,
vocation,
and what was the fourth one?
Hobby.
And hobby. Reassessing that, like, what is it? And reminding yourself, if it's vocation, that's why you do it.
Yeah, it's
a calling. That's the only reason why you do it.
How do you keep that labor of love alive in this industry? Because you all got into it because it's a labor of love.
It's impossible.
But then you get into the grind, and then, listen, eventually it's going to weigh on. So how do you keep that inner flame alive to allow you to create at that level without losing your whole perspective on why you started doing this in the first place?
Well, I mean, this is back to the whole inner child aspect
exactly,
of it all. Like, some of my favorite creatives, I mean, being in the studio with Timbaland, even with Scott Storch, we're getting an idea going, and they turn into teenagers. Like, immediately when a beat's hot or when you're playing a melody that they like, you see the smile, you see the Timbaland might even jump up and down, like, yeah, that's it, you know? And it's like, that physical aspect of it, that that ability to kind of like not have to be so cool and the OG or the Mr. Miyagi in the situation, just kind of like allow yourself to even just still be a student of the game.
Yeah,
20 years in, platinum records, Grammys done. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's that.
I always like to say too, like, I do a lot of sort of panels and talks for, you know, I'm on the Grammy LA chapter board, and we do, you know, talks for the Grammy University and stuff like that. And I always like to say, like, find something creative. And that ties into this camp so amazingly. Find something creative outside of your job.
Yes.
And do it as much as you can, whether it's painting, horseback riding, whatever, playing with your dogs, like reading books, whatever it is, just because we do this 24/7, so our life is our job.
Yes.
So if we can learn to separate that in even just a tiny way and go, hey, I can find happiness outside of outside of like
other things to talk
hit.
About.
Exactly.
To
you're
to
right.
People,
yeah.
Be able to
you're
meet
right.
a stranger and have a conversation about the things that about you, how different your world is, and also know. Like, and it's just curiosity of knowing something that and not being so self-centered and being like, okay, how can I get outside of myself? Like, you're very similar to me in this way. Like, we've had careers since we were, like, 9 years old, 10 years old, 11 years old. I literally was, like, 21 and was like, wow, okay, here we are.
Like,
who am I?
Yeah.
Who am I? I know what I do.
Right.
I know what I do.
Right.
But who am I?
Mm-hmm.
And it's finding those hobbies.
Yeah.
What do I enjoy outside of work? And because this is something that is a labor of love, because we love it so much, I don't think any of us could see ourselves doing anything other than music. So even if it was, and people play on that, they like, you don't write the song anyway.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
It's like, we just love it too much. We just love it too much not to wake up and write a song.
That's a great point. I think it gets to the heart of burnout, of that sort of danger when your one true passion in life is that all-consuming that you...
Mm.
Like, I think I love music, I love charts, but I also love sports. And I also think, you know, if I worked in sports, maybe I'd burn out on that and I wouldn't have that outlet.
Mm.
So that seems like a really important point that you do need something completely
different.
To
For me, I got creative ADD, man. So I'm out here, like, doing a film for, like, 3 months, you know what I'm saying, in Detroit or Boston. And then I'm coming back to the studio. I'm like doing a play, and then I'm coming back to do. So it's like I like literally have to kind of have that break sometimes from just writing songs for people all the time and producing, because I don't even know how y'all do it all year long. Because it's like, to me, very taxing, and the ability to empathize, to put yourself in somebody else's shoes and be them and even experience their trauma again over and over, you know.
So
let's write a sad song. Let's write a sad song. It's like, hold up.
We wrote this 17th sad song. It's going to be the whole album.
Yeah,
now I'm sad.
Yeah,
because it's your job to basically empathize so much towards, like I was saying this the other day, like, girl, if you happy, I'm happy. If you sad, I'm depressed.
Right.
It goes, because that's literally, it's one of the most selfless jobs, in my opinion.
So it's being a psychiatrist.
Literally, except not getting paid.
Yeah.
Again, nobody would do this for
free.
That's why one of my things I like to say is that I'm a muse. And I feel like we all are muses. And I feel like I had to get to a point in my career where I had to accept that, because it was weighing on me so much going in and, you know, taking other people's emotions in, and we're all empaths, and we're, you know, it's so draining. And then when I was like, you know, God, this job is so selfless in a way. And being a muse is like, you got to go in and be that light for people and be like, let me work for you. Let's do this together. Like, how can I, my experience help your experience? And, you know, I think when you realize that, it's easier to sort of accept and like protect your energy in a way, but I don't know. It's intense.
It's a lot of therapy.
How do you feel that the role of the songwriter has changed over the years?
Well, I think when the role of the A&R changed, the role of the songwriter changed. I think that you used to have A&R and things like that who actually were in the room, and not just to say they were in the room. It was actually
curating.
You're curating the sound. Like, you're actually A&R. Like, I think that role changed, and then now the songwriters are damn near A&R. Now, it's the songwriters alone pulling the best, and the producers mm-hmm. As well are pulling the best out of this artist. They're doing what some of the greatest A&Rs like that we can go back to and that become mm-hmm. like executives now, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying, really truly did. And now yeah. it's like, you know, you're being the best friend and you're being the, you know, as the songwriters and producers, because also we also have to understand that songwriters, I mean, singers back in the day when they were having songwriters, right, they most of the times didn't even meet the people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's because so even the process yeah. between the history, yeah. They didn't even know who wrote their songs. Mm-hmm. So now these artists have smartened up to the point where they're like, well, shoot, if let me see who's writing this stuff, and maybe they'll actually be more keen to giving me those hit songs, and maybe right. they'll be able to understand it. I think that everybody just learned a little bit more about the job, and so kind of the veil was pulled mm-hmm. back, you know? Because mm-hmm. I don't mm-hmm. think some songwriters back in the day, like, they were getting some type of credit, but it wasn't, it yeah. was going through a label, and then it was coming to you after they decided what artists mm-hmm. were going to do.
It was crazy you said, like, the A&Rs that we kind of look up to, they were creatives.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
When you look up the, like...
Like Quincy Jones.
Yes, Jimmy Iovine.
Yeah.
These
people are producers, songwriters, yeah. work their way up through
that's
the exact Motown system
the
or whatnot.
Yeah. You have great ear, and there's a reason why you're in the studio, and when you show up to... Now when A&Rs come into the studio, it's like, what are you doing here?
Because most of the shows,
because the songwriter is now more fulfilling that role of the A&R, because you're working with directly with the artist and helping shape what they're doing.
Exactly.
Is that creating more conflict now with the A&Rs who aren't in that space?
It depends on the communication. Again, mm-hmm. like, for instance, when I go in with an artist who's taken years to do an album and we get it done like that.
Yeah.
Those A&Rs, you can guarantee that they're happy. They're like, finally. You know, they're like, I don't think that they care how it gets done. They just care that it gets done. And as the business mind, let's switch over. I don't care how it gets done. I just want it to get done. Now, once your ego starts going into it, now that's not what's doing what's best for the song. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's the main problem. It's a lot of people battling with their egos. Mm-hmm. And that's what's mm-hmm. really, really overcome like the music industry.
Yeah.
Plus, I feel like people are afraid now to take a while to curate, to put together a team, to make a curated record, to make these like art pieces that we mm-hmm. used to have. And now it's very quick. It's like, oh, they have a hit song. I need that. Oh, this person. You know, it doesn't feel like this curated world.
Yes.
Taking the
people
time.
Used to take years. Like they get signed maybe what, a year or two before they put out their first album.
They went through development.
And actually, and remember like when records had like themes or like you know, like an arc and like a ballad and like, you know what I mean? Like it's just
a
not
album.
Well, I mean, we're in a single based industry right
now. Yeah,
exactly. It's just how we consume music has changed. So we have to kind of
put that into the conversation.
Yeah, no, it's so true.
So how do you bring it back?
I don't think it comes back.
I think it evolves.
That's
what I'm saying.
So it has to reach some kind of breaking point.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where it has to, you have to have a pivotal shift.
And that's what we are right now.
That's what I was going to say. Are we at that point now?
Like, I still think there's art pieces. Like, if you go and see, like, a Kendrick Lamar, that definitely do art pieces.
Sure.
But a lot of people don't know how to do it.
Yes, that's true.
And they're also not risky, like what she said.
Exactly.
Like, most artists, once one artist does it, then all the rest of them follow. Also, like what she was saying. So, you have too many artists who are so afraid and don't have the proper team around them to help them kind of say, look, you got to just go. Because the moment that you see a Frank Ocean drop in a crazy little thing, or the moment that you see, you know, Drake do something cool or interesting, everybody wants to follow. When it's like the only difference that they did was take a bet on themselves.
Look at the most amazing example right now, in my opinion, Billie Eilish.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type,
make your girlfriend mad type, might seduce your dad type. Wrote an entire record with her and her brother curating the sound, curating this.
Didn't matter about radio.
Record. Didn't think about any of the bullshit. And boom, it's the biggest thing in the world.
And now everybody's copying off of you.
And now everybody wants that. But she just took that risk and she's like, this is me, and made a piece.
Yes, you gotta risk it.
But even think about the song, you know, Bad Guy, for example, where the first three chords of it is like this dance, electro pop, alt indie kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then three chords of the way, and it hits the outro.
Yes.
And then switches to 60 beats per minute as opposed to 135.
Yes.
And now you have heavy plotting trap. And
there's
it's like, you don't see such crazy shifts. And she took this big, and Phineas also, not to go too much off on, you know, with Bad Guy, but, you know, he's recording sounds in Australia of like a walking signal that he's using as percussion.
Becoming a child again.
And really creating this authentic kind of sound within a familiar hit song framework, kind of.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And look at that. And it proves that you can have that kind of success.
You really can. Like,
but
you
got to take
my
those
mom first
risks.
Heard Billie Eilish on, like, 102.7. She was like, I thought I changed the radio station. And I'm like, that. She was like, I thought I was on alternative nothing. Like, I was like, this is hilarious. But even more so is the thing that, wow, you are shifting radio and you're doing it your way. That is what the whole thing is about, is you literally believe in yourself so much and you believe that you have something that's meant to say and this is the way that you would say it. That you believe in it enough to say, I see what's going on to my left and my right. But it doesn't matter because I'm here. I'm here with it, you know?
And I think those moments in music are so exciting for us. Because it's like, oh, wait, we can take risks too. We can, you know, push artists we work with to do something a little different, or I don't know, it opens up the whole playing field. And it's exciting.
As songwriters, obviously you're there for the beginning of the song. You all create it. But now there's so many people, you know, so many hands in the pot between if you don't produce it yourself, or the engineer, or the record executive. At what point do you leave the song? Or are you with it throughout the whole process? Are you there, you know, sometimes when it's recorded, sometimes, or do you just hand it off and sometimes you just wait 6 months and, oh, there it is on the radio. Wow, I didn't know.
Yeah, every song is different. You can have a situation like I mean, we've all like worked in different capacities. We got different cuts. So like me and you, I feel like it was like 1 week of just boom boom. It was getting mixed that week, right? You know what I'm saying? With you, we've had stuff that's taken maybe like a little longer or whatever. But and then we work on also completely different artists because it also depends on their rollout and is this type of artist the one to do a singles based game or is this a you know, is this somebody who is taking their time and really building out? Because it's up to them. And also, things come up when you're when an artist picks a release date and when they're trying to place a song or whatever. So there is no right or wrong way to do it, which is also makes it exciting and fun. You know, it's like there's always an opportunity to do something different. That's the most exciting part about the music industry right now. Is because now people are like, well, might as well just make up our own rules. Like, so seriously, you have creative publishing contracts being done. You have creative labels. You have creative, like, just they're noticing that they have to do music that is of today. Like, they have to do music business of today. You know what I'm saying? So placing a song is very interesting in today's day and age because you might just text it to the, versus saying, oh, if your label doesn't like it, it's just not going to happen. Back in the day, I would text this song to the person and see if they like it and give them an opportunity, or the label is saying that they like it. How many times have you said, have you asked us artists about a song because their label said they like it and they're like, I haven't even heard it?
Exactly. I literally just talk to the artist. Like, and that's what I'm talking about. You know, it just comes to genuinely having a relationship with the people that you're that you're working with. And a lot of the plays that have been happening for me in the last 2 years have all happened in iMessage. You know what I'm saying? Like, straight boom, boom. Let's listen to it on the iPhone. If it can't work on the iPhone, it's probably not going to work anyway. So, you know. Like,
and also, I think as what we do, there's like a no fear thing. Like, for me, I'm like, I have this person's number. We're friends. We're texting it. If you don't text me back, I don't care. At least I took the initiative to say, hey, listen to this. And sometimes they do listen and they write back and they're like, oh, I like this, change this, blah, 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 blah. You know, and I don't know. I think it's all about the personal relationship for us. We can't rely on anybody else, really.
No.
A songwriter, they may go in and write the song and it was done there. But they may sometimes like, yo, we should change this, and Taylor might pull back up and change what it is. But being a actual true producer versus like a beat maker, it's a different process. So I take the approach of like the Quincy's and different things. Quincy didn't play every instrument or do every drum on a track. You go and you produce the song to give the song the best chance that it has. So I may go get violins from Brooklyn and a drummer from L.A., but that's how a lot of times a lot of hands get in the pot when you're looking at it from a producer's standpoint.
That's real.
Because you, as just solely a songwriter, for me, I go in, do what I do, and then energetically, I leave the song. Yeah,
they have
and
to stay with it.
I'm like, I gotta go, because if I get too attached to it, I'll be heartbroken if this doesn't happen or that, or, you know. But Tommy and people, you know, producers, they have to build it up for however long, months, years.
Then they go back and like have to also approve the mix and the master.
And we could pop back in time to time and go, oh, change that, change this, but you know,
It just depends. And everybody, again, like every songwriter is like different. There's some songwriters who are producing. There's some songwriters who have a lot more say in the, or there's some producers who actually mix their own stuff versus sending it out, and that's it. Everybody, but again, that's what makes this exciting and an opportunity for great collaboration. I want it, I got it, I want it.
To that point, Taylor, I feel like one of the more interesting stories the last year was when Thank You Next came out so quickly with Sweetener. It was suddenly, oh, there's another album. And it felt so organic to the artist that Ariana had so much more to say. You guys had more to say that, she's probably supposed to wait 2 years for another album, but let's just put this out now. Did it feel to you that, we're kind of doing something different, but the art demands it?
Yes, we knew that we were doing something different, and I think that that's what made us exciting, because if you know me, you know I'm always trying to push the boundary. Mm-hmm. And so when I have like-minded creatives that are also like, let's do something different, and then we have some of our biggest successes because of it, it only goes back to saying exactly what everybody on this couch is saying, like, be fearless, be a kid of it, don't break the rules, like, if that's what's necessary, because you never know, you literally could change your life by just doing that, just by believing it's different, you know. And she wouldn't have related to the songs if she was over it, you know. If you took too long to do it, it would have been a completely different thing. And right now, what a hit song is relatable. That's the only thing that we know for sure about a hit song. We don't know what it sounds like. All that we know is a hit song is relatable.
It was crazy. Like, even the process of doing that was like crazy. Like, I literally text her. I text Ariana, was like, hey, the next stuff that you do is going to be the biggest stuff. She's like, why? I was like, I just had the feeling. She's like, all right, let's get together in like 2 weeks and just go in the studio. And it was funny. I was in the studio with another artist, and I called Taylor. I was like, man, I got to see what Taylor's doing. I'm like, yo, what you doing? I feel like it was like 2 days later. Like, what you doing in 2 days? She's like, I'll be in New York. I'm like, well, we're going to be in New York. You think you got some time to come past? And then like 1 week, we did like half of that record. And 1 week, all of the songs.
That's like a crazy God moment.
It all came together.
And I think also like running with the creativity, we can sometimes overthink it in a room. And then sometimes the artist can also overthink, you know, and they overthink like what they feel like it is. And so it's not even that, you know, we're just so fast or anything like that. It's just that we were working with people who happen to be on the same page and been working with a label that believed in the vision and that saw that this is just something that is natural, and a publishing company that also had to, you know, it was all of those people having to all be fearless enough to
it's all about the connection in the end. Everybody being on the same page.
That's why I like this camp, because it like forces you to get out of your comfort zone with people like me. I was sitting in a room by myself kind of person, but like, yo, we gotta go here and do these exercises, these breathing exercises.
No, sir.
I knew this something. I was like, okay, I'm inviting some friends. It's gonna be a little too cool for school. Literally, the fact that everybody has been so open-minded about everything, and me knowing that these two in particular have very, like, those type of personality where I'm like, I'm talking to everybody, what the hell is good? Just hyper. You know, the fact that you guys were so, like, open to experiencing that thing, and the fact that it also affected you in a positive way, like, this is something I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. And I'm super happy that you're telling your friends and your producers and stuff about it back at home, because that is really the point of it. So that looking back, you know, looking 20 years from now, this is the new normal. Everybody's doing it. I know that people, we were talking about it in the car, we're like, we know that people are going to copy this, but actually for one of the few times, this is actually something I want
that's
you to
okay
copy.
To copy.
It's good for the creative. We don't have enough things that are good for the creative.
Yeah, we know.
Today's the last day of Burnout, right? So what if each of you like one thing that you really took away from this experience, like something that really made a difference in your lives?
I think when I go back, I want to, which I always say I want to do, but I don't. I think at least once a week, taking a day to just dedicating to me.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Go spend time.
Love that.
To
okay.
Do that.
Wow. That's that Rihanna P personal day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really important to have that. I mean, I think for me, I use this app called Headspace to meditate.
Me too.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So
yes.
Really cool.
Yep.
You know, it's very easy to use, user-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I kind of want to step away from the app a little bit. I mean, you know, no hate to Headspace, but, you know, seeing what it was like with this guided, you know, meditation, I feel like it'd be really awesome to kind of just maybe go out to a park and,
mm-hmm.
and just really check in with myself one time,
mm-hmm.
touching with nature. And I know that sounds like I'm like, you know, extra, you know, hippie-ish right now, but I think that's really like, that's really to me something that I think
so.
I'm going to work into my personal day that I already take because, you know, it's just
mm-hmm.
important to have, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I think that that was the whole point of burnout,
yeah.
is not to say, like, you know, we're all turning to hippie. It's to say balance it out. We still like to party. We still like to do those things or whatever your thing is.
Mm-hmm.
But balance is, like, the key to everything. So the one thing that I'm like is
yeah.
I really got to experience even more ways than I did before on how I can keep my stress and keep having fun with this. Like, whether I really like the aromatherapy one, so
yeah.
I was like, because I have like diffusers in each room in my crib,
mm.
and literally I'm like, you don't realize how all of these things and the mindfulness too, and just closing my eyes and seeing what I hear, you'd be surprised on like the people who do the music listen the least.
Mm.
Yeah, so
you
true.
Gotta you go back to the basics. Listen to the conversations that you have,
yeah.
because music starts before you go into the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Music starts in the conversations you have.
Exactly.
Music starts in the people that you meet. It that's where the music starts. So
yeah.
if you're not doing that,
what do you have to say?
What do you guys
say? Right.
So
yeah.
I love learning all these things about just like
mm-hmm.
controlling the vibe with
mm-hmm.
the colors and the.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, two things. I mean, meditation's a big part of my life anyway, but definitely, you know, stepping it up, reminding myself to keep it a practice. And I love the Tai Chi. Definitely want to get into some Tai Chi.
Yeah.
Love that.
Okay.
Shaking the arm.
fun. This is like my Tai Chi part of
I know. We were going back and forth. definitely that. And then also for me, you know, I get really like in my bubble at home and with the writers I love and my friends and in this bubble, which is great and super dope. But, you know, being here is a lot of new people that I've never met and never worked with. And, you know, like, for instance, yesterday I worked with a new writer and I'm always a bit apprehensive at first just because I, you know, you have to open up your whole world. So it's like, oh, it's easy if it's your homie, you know? But
yeah.
I loved writing with this writer yesterday and I was like, oh, I love this. New energy,
mm-hmm.
new people,
mm-hmm.
new friends, you know? And I think sometimes when you have success, it's easy to be like, oh, let's stay in my bubble. This works,
mm-hmm.
nothing, you know? So, yeah, I think just opening up myself to newer faces, newer artists, newer writers, and I think that's something I definitely take away from this.
And I'm just thinking of something we talked about also in the car on the way over, but we've had some pretty early mornings, like getting up at 8:30,
mm-hmm.
a little bit earlier than usual.
Yes.
I know that's not early for most. And
I'll take that.
Taylor pointed out how efficient we've been with our time because we go straight to breakfast, to the activities, to the sessions.
Yeah.
And I think about how much empty time I have in any given day, and most people must also have when they're on their phones or just kind of zoning out or watching a show. Sometimes that's needed, but if you can take that time and use it for one of the activities we learn, like that's so much more beneficial.
Yeah.
Don't have to be the whole day, but you know that when you step into that studio that you won't get a chance to do it after. You're going
right.
to be locked in there, and nor should you cut off the creative juices, but take care of yourself before you go to the studio.
Yeah.
yeah.
I feel like this is something everyone listening can take in their own life.
Yes.
What their own
yes.
schedule is.
Yes.
I was like, ain't it fun funny how much like longer the day seems when you get up early. Like, how much more, and I don't mean longer like as it drags on, but how much more time you feel like you have to do everything.
Yes. Yes.
You get up at noon, you already feel like you're, you know, the half the day's gone,
right?
You're already behind,
especially
like,
in LA, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
chilling.
Just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. People are like, I need more hours in the day. It's like, wake up earlier.
I know.
Yeah.
That's so
exactly.
It.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much. Can we have you back for more to get into the actual art and craft of songwriting? Because there's no one better to learn this from than you guys, who are totally dominating the charts. And just thank you so much for these insights. So we'll see you on part two.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, guys.
I need to, like, move around. I'm too hyper.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host
Niñas Bien podcast. We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.